Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Tim Cyclesman-Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on Cyclesman.com. He's speaking to us from Gulf Shores, Alabama. Welcome back to the shore. Back to the shore.
That'll work.
That'll
Thanks
work.
For having me.
Yeah, shore show, it all works out the same.
It all works the same.
Well, speaking of shores, a favorite of ours, Bob Hoy, market historian, he likes to bring up the 1720 South Seas bubble, and he said the markets today reminds him of that. Maybe remind our listeners just what was the South Seas bubble, how big it was, and how it compares to today's debt.
Well, I wrote about that very thing, I don't know, it's probably been 6 months ago or so, in one of the research letters and trying to give perspective. You know, we talked about this being a bubble, 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 and it just keeps going on and on and on. And, you know, obviously, I think a lot of people realize that, or have now come to realize that it truly is a bubble of biblical proportion. But to give it perspective, I researched the South Sea bubble a little bit, and for those that may not be familiar, basically, in a nutshell, the South Sea bubble, that come about. It was a scheme, call it what it was. It was a scheme between the English government and private industry, and in consideration for exclusive trading rights in the South Seas, it allowed the English government some easier terms so that they could continue the expansion of their debt, because it's all about the expansion of debt. And you and I have talked about that. That's what this is about. You know, with the stimulus packages and on and on and on and on. Expand that debt. And like Richard Russell used to say, inflate or die. And so I did some computations. I've got an old set of encyclopedias, 1904 encyclopedias, and it happened to have something about the South Sea bubble in it. And in dollar equivalents, it said that as of 1904, it said that the South Sea bubble debt was approximately $150 million. Well, if you do the dollar equivalents of today, that equates to like $4.6 billion. And with a national debt, U.S. debt, at $29.6 trillion, you do the math, and I had to break out a spreadsheet to do the math to deal with the zeros, but you do the math. This is from a debt perspective now. This bubble is 6,400 times larger than that of the South Sea bubble. So, yeah, I mean, we're dealing with something that is, I mean, it's unimaginable in scope and what we're dealing with. You know, like I said, it's gone on far longer, and it's been fueled by the central banks to try to keep things together, and it's just created a bigger and bigger and bigger problem.
Now, inflation is the big bugaboo around the world. In Canada and the U.S. officially, it's running around 7%, numbers we haven't seen since the early 80s or early 90s. How's that affecting the markets and the opportunities to invest?
Well, I think anyone who was on the right side of the commodity trade, you know, they're looking like geniuses. The problem now is that, you know, that train has long since left the station. And for comparison, I wanted to talk about commodities, so I was prepared for that. Made some notes, just jotted them down. You know, back in, you know, corn is a $3 to $4 a bushel item. Soybeans, you know, typically $7, $8, something like that. Wheat, $4 to $5. Well, I look back, just for comparison again, try to put this in perspective. In April of 2020, corn was $3. Now it's over $8. Soybeans, They were around $8 at the same time frame in early 2020, and now they're over 18 or right at almost 18. Wheat has been as high as 14. And like I said, that's normally a $4 to $5 a bushel item. And currently it's in the $10 to $11 range. And, you know, I see it at the grocery stores as well. You know, eggs, I don't pay attention to a lot of groceries. My wife buys most of the stuff, but I can't help but notice a few things. And I remember vividly, pre-COVID, that a dozen eggs at the grocery store I used to shop at, or still do, they were $1.39 a dozen for extra large dozen eggs. And I was in there the other day, they were $3.59. Well, that's, you know, that's almost, what, a 1.6, 1.7, something like that, increase in the price of eggs. So we're seeing this tremendous increase, and, you know, I think it was, obviously it started with COVID, and now everybody's pointing the finger with the Ukraine, and I guess it's a combination of the both in reality, but I think what we're also seeing is that this is going to result, this is a heavy burden, and we've talked about this before too, I think, on the economy as a whole. I don't think that this is sustainable. It's just not. But I think the real story lies with interest rates. You know, I don't know where the breaking point with commodities are. Maybe we need to see soybeans go to $25 a bushel. Maybe we need to see gasoline double from here. I don't know where that breaking point is, but I know what the trigger is, and I think that trigger is interest rates.
It's interesting, friend of the show, Sean Broderick, pointed out gasoline prices aren't really affected by interest rates, but housing prices sure are. And, of course, the biggest purchase you'll ever make in your life for the average person is their home. How high do interest rates have to go before home sales start to fall off and house prices come down, destroying that equity a lot of people thought was guaranteed?
Exactly. Again, I don't know where that magic line in the sand is, but someone told me today, now I didn't fact check this, but I just happened to be talking to someone today, and they said that they had seen where mortgage rates, a 30-year mortgage rate had gone from like 2.75, I think, to like 5.25. So, you know, in round numbers, that's almost a double, right? So interest rates are indeed going to start. That's what I'm saying. The same thing about commodities. It's going to start to impact things. I think what we're seeing is a breaking of the system, and I guess the system just hasn't realized, or people haven't realized it yet. But this is unsustainable. This is serious. And I think it's definitely unsustainable. I think the key lies with interest rates. If you want to get off in the weeds with that, I have some interesting data on that, I think.
Well, we love to get into the weeds. We're just coming off 420 in Vancouver, where people are still protesting legal marijuana now because they say it's not cheap enough.
Legal marijuana is not cheap enough. Well, you know, it's probably taxed. It's probably heavily taxed.
It is.
Right? Well, I'll leave that one alone. I guess.
But we're just talking about the real cost of things, and you had some calculations there with interest rates.
Right. So anyway, my point with interest rates is with a model that I have, it triggers. Let's just call it a trigger. And going back to the early 1950s, I see this trigger that has always occurred with, it's marked the top of a rate hiking cycle. Okay. So picture in your mind, you know, the cycle that turns up and trending up. And then you get somewhere along the way, you get this trigger and it marks the top of that rate hiking cycle. Now, in some cases, it was the top. And in one case, the Fed chased it a little bit. That was the longer term top in the 80s. And it triggered a couple of times. They kept raising and they danced with it. And we got three triggers with that longer term topping process there. So it's the beginning of the end. When you see this, it's the beginning of the end of a rate hiking cycle. And I think about what I'm also saying there. Listen to my words. I'm saying it's the topping of a rate hiking cycle. In other words, rates had been going up for some period of time. And then you see this marker signaling that rates have peaked. Well, back in February, and I think we talked about this. Maybe we haven't because we hadn't done an interview in a while. But back in February, that trigger happened. And when it did, I knew that, you know, from studying this, that, you know, obviously the Fed's going to do one or two things. Either they're going to sit tight and not raise, or they're going to raise. But if they do, it's going to re-trigger again. It's going to force another triggering. Well, that's exactly what happened. And so now what I'm seeing is, like I said, I think we're at the beginning of the end of a rate hiking cycle. But think about that. Think about that. The cycle had never even turned up when we got the trigger. And here we are. We've seen one little rate hike coming off of these lows. And already this thing is triggering, giving an indication that we're at the top of a cycle. Now, I suspect that what they're going to do is raise until it breaks. I suspect they have no other choice. But in looking at 50 years of data, I am basically 100% confident that the data is accurate and that this time will prove no different in that it is the beginning of the end of a rate hiking cycle. And so what I think that rate hiking cycle, once it peaks, tells us, or it's triggering based on more of this research, is that that's the prelude. That's part of the setup with the unraveling, I think, of the bubble, the peaking of commodity prices, the peaking of the asset bubble, and the downturn pretty much in all asset classes. So I think that while we're all focused on gasoline and the price of eggs and, you know, and all this other, you know, this inflationary stuff, not that that's not real or important, but I'm saying I think that behind the scenes, the real story that we need to be focused on is understanding what interest rates are telling us.
We'll have more with Tim Cycles Man Wood right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Tim Cyclesman Wood. Tim, back when inflation was rampant in the early 1980s, I remember I was lucky enough to work for a radio station that gave you cost of living bonuses every 3 months. Do you think employers will do that this time, or are we in for a wave of strikes as people try to drag their wages up to the real rate of inflation?
You know, I don't know how that's going to play out. At least in the U.S., from what I'm seeing, people are just having to eat the increased cost of living. I'm not aware of employers going, hey, well, you know, I know your cost of living's gone up, so let me just willingly give you a raise to offset that cost. I don't, you know, my common sense tells me that's not going to happen. I don't see any evidence of that happening in the U.S. So I think that, again, it's like one guy told me, back to my point about this tax, this being a tax, a burden, however you want to say it, on the system and a breaking of the system. This is like one guy, I heard two people say this actually. They said the solution for, you know, $100+ barrel of oil is $100+ barrel of oil. You know, it's not sustainable is the point. So, you know, I don't know where that magic line in the sand is, but that is my point, is that these increases in prices are going to break the system, I think. Because I'm seeing it, I'm hearing it from friends, even simple things. I'm hearing people saying, well, I'm not buying that, I'm not doing that. And so, you know, that will gain momentum just from, not because people can't afford to pay, you know, it's like a perfect example. My nephew told me, this is kind of a corny example, but it's a good example. He said that he was at a grocery store and something he normally buys, some kind of shower gel or something. He said all of a sudden, he said, it's like $12. He's like, well, I'll just, you know, I don't need that. I'm not giving you $12 for shower gel. I'll just use a bar of soap. And so that's what I'm saying. That sort of thing, that mentality, I think will filter through and eventually crack the back of what we're seeing with these increased prices.
Sure. And those TV shows that show you how to be frugal, such as when you get to the end of the tube of toothpaste, slice it open. You can get another three cleanings out of it. But if everybody did that, that's a tremendous amount of toothpaste.
That is true. That is true.
Tim, so if you're investing in an inflationary time, are there any keys to it? Because putting your money in the bank will lose you money.
Look, I don't know. This has gone on far longer than I imagined, and this is such a touchy situation here. I mean, we know that things are extended. Like I said, we're seeing commodities at all-time highs. Some of them we're seeing in some cases things wanting to try to crack, and to think or to try to speculate on something when we're this far along in a move like this. You know, I'm certainly not going to step out on a limb and say, oh yeah, buy soybeans or crude oil or whatever, because, you know, there is evidence that some of this stuff is trying to peak, and turn. Does it bite yet? I don't know. I mean, on that hand, once we see the structure where it does bite, then I'd feel, you know, I'll feel fairly confident in saying, okay, yeah, it's turned, but we're not quite there yet either. So, you know, looking at the short side of this thing, is risky as well. We know it's extended. We know everything is stretched. We know we're in a bubble, but, you know, where's that line in the sand? I don't know that yet. I'll see it with structure when we see it. But again, I think the key to all of this now is interest rates. And, you know, as long as rates are going up, I think that's another increased tax on the system. You mentioned something about housing a minute ago, and I was just remembering a chart that I was looking at. It was some sort of a home furnishings. I can't even remember exactly what it was, but it was some sort of like a home furnishings type index. And it looked like to me that the structure there had broken and it was starting to crack. So I think we're starting to see some of that. But again, I don't know that we've crossed that line in the sand just yet.
I remember back in 1981, a housing developer, bulldozed the houses that he made. Because he couldn't sell them with mortgage rates at 18%.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. That's all. Even though we have a housing shortage in both Canada and the U.S. in many areas, I wonder if developers will start bulldozing their developments because it's just not worth selling.
I don't know. That's pretty extreme. I suspect we won't see that in my area, but... you know, I don't know. I do think that housing prices are going to come, once we do round the curve, I do think housing prices are going to come back down to earth, because I've seen them in my area double in the last 10 years, 10 to 12 years. Housing prices have doubled since the bottom following the, you know, the 2007 top. And that's insanity.
Tim, with this rampant inflation, are you, surprised or mildly bemused that gold hasn't skyrocketed, considering we're living in what's called troubled times?
No, I'm not at all, because, you know, we've talked about that too. So, you know, the fact that interest rates and gold did not confirm this inflationary round that we've seen tells me that, you know, this is a hard concept to grasp, and it sounds counterintuitive. Everybody sees things the obvious, and typically it's not the obvious when you see it. But, you know, we've talked about this before, and I said it's not necessarily monetary inflation that we're seeing. Everybody points to all the stimulus and all the government spending, and they say this inflation is because of, you know, those actions. And I disagree with that, because interest rates are not confirming this. If it was monetary, largely monetary, I think interest rates would be confirming it. I think gold would be confirming it. What we're seeing is a result of the supply chain issues, the shortages that has occurred in the wake of the COVID and now this Ukrainian fiasco. So, what's the next step? What's the next play that keeps this going or not? I don't know. But, I think gold, that was the long answer. So I think, like I said, gold and interest rates are telling the story.
Tim, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Tim Cyclesman Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on cyclesman.com. If you have any questions for Tim or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com and we'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
comments made on HowStreet.com Radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.